Dr. Peter Chin Hong is with us on Air Talk. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us. Hope you had a nice weekend, and maybe you got an extra day with MLK Day yesterday, or were you back at work?
I did get an extra day. I was just on telephone yesterday, so I got some chance to enjoy the sunshine. It's a little bit nice in Northern California.
Yeah, we had a beautiful weekend here. Saturday particularly was spectacular. But of course, what's not spectacular is what we're still seeing with the number of hospitalizations for COVID-19. A research team at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles said they have identified a new strain of COVID-19 that is apparently different from the UK strain, not one that they had seen before. And so they're speculating, and it's only speculation, that that strain could be what is pushing the Los Angeles area numbers to be so much higher than other parts of the country. They said about a third of the cases here appear to be from this new strain. What are your thoughts about that observation?
I think it's completely plausible, Larry. I think in the beginning, folks were wondering whether or not there was a variant that was associated with this massive outbreak in the face of the shelter in place that was very, very different. So the identification of something like, you know, CAL-20C, or, you know, which encompasses that variant described by the state as well on that sort of strange Sunday evening press conference, L452R, they both say the same thing, which is there is a strain or variant in California that's possibly linked to outbreaks in Santa Clara County as well as Southern California surges. And this may be more transmissible because it's also associated with mutants in the spike protein, making it potentially stickier.
And that's what we saw with the UK variant, correct? That it wasn't necessarily more injurious, but it was easier to contract.
Yes. This is, you know, the virus is mutating every 2 weeks. And sometimes by chance, because the pandemic is going on for so long, that we're going to see variants that would result in something that's more transmissible. And that's the case in the UK, in South Africa, in Brazil, and potentially in this California variant that's now being described.
So one of the first questions, Dr. Chin Hong, is does this mean that the vaccines that are out there might be less effective against a more recently appeared variant?
That's the million-dollar question, but my sense is that it's going to be still effective. There were some initial studies done on the UK variant with the Pfizer vaccine, and it confirmed what many scientists thought, that the vaccines are still going to be effective even in the face of these variants, because it takes years for a variant to be so different over time that the immune system wouldn't recognize it from the original vaccine, because our immune system is both redundant and there's a repertoire of antibodies that are formed towards each of the spike proteins presented from the vaccine.
And these variants of the virus or new strains, is this like a rapid evolution process? What causes this?
We see variants mainly because the virus is really sloppy when it makes more of itself. So you wouldn't want to have this virus as part of your workforce in KPCC, for example. It'll be like super sloppy whenever it does work. It makes mistakes. So when it makes copies of itself in the process of reproduction, it's not exactly like the parent. And because of that difference, there's some strains, or variants actually is a better word for a minor change. There are variants that might result in differences in some parts of the virus that make it more apt to do certain things, like spike proteins being stickier or being more apt to cause land on the upper airways rather than the lower airways. So these are the kinds of things that potentially make the virus persist longer rather than killing off the host.
So the sloppiness, we notice the ones that become more effective, I guess. But if the way you're putting it, unlike evolution where it adapts to be more successful, it sounds like where you get the variants where it's less sticky, perhaps, less communicable, we don't even hear about those.
Yes, exactly. Those are, you know, the viruses that get relegated to the back of the history books, whereas the ones that we hear about are the famous ones.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center, noted infectious disease specialist and a part of our KPECC family of experts we bring to you every day to talk about COVID-19, vaccination for the coronavirus, and much more. You have questions for Dr. PCH? We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Dr. Chin Hong, one of the things that we're seeing here in Southern California, I don't know how it is up in the Bay Area, but different jurisdictions are at very different places in the priority list for people to receive vaccination for COVID-19. So, for example, Long Beach, LA County City, with its own health department, is making appointments for its residents 65 years of age and up. In Los Angeles County, they're just starting to get to the 75-year-olds and up. Same with Pasadena with its own health department. So why are we seeing such differences in the ability of different jurisdictions to vaccinate its population?
Yeah, that's an observation that we've been seeing here in Northern California as well. And added to that complexity, there's also the complexity of different healthcare systems. So you could be in a county, but also you can have a healthcare provider within a system that may also contact you independently. So of course, that leads to a lot of confusion. It leads to sadness because you may be 65 in one county, but your friend in the next county can get the vaccine and you can't based on your county's availability. In general, smaller counties and health departments have more sort of well-oiled machinery because it's just a numbers game. So, no, that Long Beach with its own health department is already vaccinating or plans to vaccinate grocery workers and educators way ahead of other health jurisdictions in other parts of the state. So I think the patchwork is confusing. It leads to redundancies, like we mentioned, but it also leads to gaps because if you're not where you don't have the wherewithal, you don't have a smartphone, nobody told you where to sign up, you may be left behind.
So there are always a lot of good reasons to live in Long Beach. Here's yet another one. If you want a vaccine, it's more readily available. By the way, we're going to be talking with the mayor of Long Beach, Robert Garcia, later this week about how they're doing what they're doing with their municipal health department. Again, Dr. Peter Chin Hong with us. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. We'll be back with more of your questions for Dr. Peter Chin Hong of UC San Francisco. So good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center. He's professor of medicine and infectious disease specialist. And listener just tweeting at AirTalk, raising the issue about this new variant. David says, I know the variant may be a component of our spike in cases, but honestly, we see in LA County behaviors aren't consistent with a stay-at-home order. It's concerning that these findings may help undermine the compliance with health department orders, as people will think, well, it doesn't matter what we do. David, I would think a rational response would be, gosh, if we're dealing with an even more communicable variant of the virus that causes COVID-19, wouldn't we then want to be even more compliant with the public health orders if that's the case? Dr. Peter Chin Hong, your thoughts about that?
I agree so fully with you, Larry. the fact that this variant is around or potentially causing more transmissible disease makes us really pause and really want to, you know, do what we've been doing so far rather than the opposite. I think we can have an impact because our protections still work against this variant. Our vaccines will likely still work. The fewer people that have COVID, period, the fewer people that can transmit the stickier variant.
We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Anthony asks on our Facebook page, if we reach a 70% level of vaccination of the public, do you foresee that we will get back to, quote, normal?
That's a great question from Anthony and something I've been thinking about, particularly in the last few weeks. I think we wouldn't get back to complete U.S. back to normal immediately. But what you're going to see is probably three phases of getting back to normal. First, just like we had a quarantine or a bubble in COVID pre-vaccine times, you'll probably see people getting together in immunity bubbles. So if you're in your immunity bubble and your group of family members or friends have had the vaccine and it's more than 7 days after the second dose, if you're getting the Pfizer or Moderna, for example, you will imagine those people sort of like congregating together, you know, safely. Then there is a regional bubble. I think it will be patchwork because, as you've seen, different regions will have different vaccination strategies and will vaccinate their communities at different rates. So a Long Beach might have regional herd immunity before, say, other counties. And what that means is that in that jurisdiction, you can imagine businesses, et cetera, coming back to normal, but we'll still be wearing masks because we don't know for sure if vaccines can prevent transmission. But that data should be coming soon.
Yeah,
then we'll see U.S.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish.
And then finally, the last bubble is just the national and global bubble. That will take a longer time just because of, you know, all of the problems with rollout.
I was just going to say, and those are the studies we're awaiting on the potential shedding of the virus by people who have immunity to it, but still might have in their nostrils or airways virus that could be ejected and could be communicable to someone else.
Exactly. And if you remember the polio vaccine, there were two types of polio vaccines. There was the oral and then there was the injectable. And what they found is that in the oral vaccine, it actually eradicated the polio in the gut so that these folks would transmit it less in sewage and so on versus the injectable.
That's fascinating. I had those little sugar cubes as a kid and went to my local elementary school to get those the polio vaccine. 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Jill in Westlake Village says, does ibuprofen or acetaminophen affect the efficacy of the vaccine? I was told you aren't supposed to take either of those medications a couple of days in advance of injection.
Yes, yeah, so it's not a strict recommendation, but if you ask healthcare professionals, sort of indirectly, or scientists, because the ibuprofen acts directly on the inflammatory pathway, people just feel, okay, well, if I have a fever or aches, I'm going to take Tylenol instead, because it just acts at a different mechanism than the actual immunology and inflammatory pathway.
Okay, so she was asking about both, but you're saying ibuprofen is the one about which there's a little more concern.
Yes.
Okay. 866-893-KPECC. Julie in the Valley asks, is it likely the new virus strain could be more transmissible on surfaces? Do we need to reintroduce new protocols for handling packages and mail?
No, right now we think, even with the UK variant and South African variant, that it, of course, we don't know everything yet, but so far it still seems to be going along the same route as respiratory spread primarily and less important for surfaces, fortunately.
One of the areas of controversy we've had here, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, is over Los Angeles County's position that everyone who works in healthcare should be vaccinated first before going to 65-year-olds plus, as well as others who work at grocery stores, for example. And Alex in Laurel Canyon asks about the ethical issues of this. If you got a receptionist who's behind glass barriers at, you know, some sort of a healthcare clinic versus someone working in a supermarket or someone who's 65 years of age and older, do you think that the priority LA County has set that everyone in healthcare gets it first is the right priority?
I think initially it was the right sort of philosophical approach, meaning that, sure, you'd want to take care of the people who are both at risk of doing poorly, like nursing home residents, so others in congregate settings, as well as those taking care of the people who are sick, like healthcare workers at the front line. But at a certain point, you have to say, gosh, I'm discarding some vaccines. The system is complicated. It is intricate. It's over 65 in one county. It's over 75 in one county. Grocery workers by some, Uber drivers by the other, and it gets really messy. And at some point, you just have to unleash the vaccines and say, you know, we have a bunch of vaccines. We've done the best job we can at the front of the line. The rest of folks, let's make appointments. Let's try to get it out as soon as possible so we can achieve herd immunity and restore the life that we aspire to.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center, professor of medicine. Eric tweets at AirTalk, my wife and I haven't been in my parents' house since the pandemic started. They're in the next vaccine group, but we won't be vaccinated for some time due to our age. Once my parents are vaccinated, would we be able to relax any of our restrictions about going to their home?
That's a great point. I mean, certainly if your parents have been vaccinated and, you know, there's a very small chance they wouldn't have responded, which is less than 5%. But say that most chances are that they have responded and they're sort of keeping themselves relatively safe so that you wouldn't get COVID from them that might have landed on their nose and mouth, even though they can't get disease. I think it would be safe in general because you're not going to bring in COVID and necessarily infect them. I think the guidance for mixed households, some are vaccinated, some haven't, have to do with who's been vaccinated. And if the higher risk person has been vaccinated and you're most worried about them, you know, you could think about potentially relaxing some of these restrictions.
I wonder, though, you know, if I was in Eric and his wife's position, I think I might still wear a face covering in visiting the parents, because until we know about that shedding issue of whether the parents, even though they're likely to be immune, whether they might potentially shed, would that make sense for Eric and his wife to cover when they go to visit?
Yes, definitely. I mean, certainly that will be the recommendation that most people would probably adhere to, because at the end of the day, we're not really sure if the person who's vaccinated can still shed virus. So you have to make that determination on an individual level. But in general, that's going to be the recommendation you'll see. And that's why masks aren't going to go away for a long time, because when you go out into the community or into different households where you're not really sure who's been vaccinated, you want to protect against that possibility.
We'll continue with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco. We have a question from a doctor in Fullerton, which is a fascinating one. We'll ask this of Dr. Peter Chin Hong when we come back in just 1 minute. Stay tuned. I love that story about Elizabeth Blackwell that Terry Gross was just talking about at noon. That'll be fascinating. So as a joke, they let her into medical school and she shows them. I love it. We'll hear more about her coming up on Fresh Air at noon right here on KPCC. I have a question for Dr. Peter Chin Hong that has just come in from Mamohan, who is a physician in Fullerton. He got two shots of the Pfizer vaccine. His second shot he got about 15 days ago. And on the 10th day, he started having flu-like symptoms, said he's had them for 5 days, and he's not getting better. He had a COVID test yesterday, but hasn't received his results yet. He's closed his office because he's sick, but wondering if Dr. Peter Chin Hong has any suggestions for what he should do or why this might be happening.
That's a very interesting situation from that listener, Mamohan. I would think that there are a few possibilities. There's a small chance that he's in the 5% of folks who didn't respond to the vaccine because it's not 100% effective. But I think that's a really small chance. The second possibility, probably more likely these days, is actually there are still respiratory viruses floating around, believe it or not. You know, I took care of someone with influenza last week when I was on call. So I would encourage him to go to get tested for other respiratory viruses. At the end of the day, it might be a cold, which has, you know, some of these 300 viruses that still can cause colds. We haven't seen as many of them this year because of all of the other protections we've been doing, but there are also other things that can cause that. But I'd be interested for sure if he did end up being positive for COVID, but I'll be surprised if that is the case.
Is it possible that after someone has received their second injection of the vaccine, because some people do have an immune response, their arm swells, or they have some mild flu-like symptoms, you know, for 24 hours or whatever, is it possible that you're more vulnerable to getting a flu or a cold during that period?
That's a great thought, but I think you're probably more vulnerable to get the flu or the cold by maybe having, you know, some sort of psychological security that you're kind of protected against COVID, but it doesn't protect you against the other things.
All right. Ava has a follow-up question about ibuprofen. She received her first vaccine 3 days ago, took some ibuprofen today. Now she's concerned that that might have in some way interfered. How concerned should she be?
I don't think she should be very concerned at all. This is all speculation, and I haven't seen any convincing evidence to the contrary. In fact, I like ibuprofen myself.
Larry.
And I just may not use it.
Larry tweets at AirTalk, is it true the Moderna vaccine is 86% effective in people over 65? I don't have the stats at hand.
Yeah, it's about 90% effective in that group. But again, when you're looking at over 65 to younger than 65, you know, that it's all very similar. And, you know, I would consider it very strong efficacy and not that one is, you know, say the Pfizer is better than the Moderna. They're, you know, in from a vaccinologist's perspective, they're both outstanding vaccines at all age groups.
866-893 KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Apparently in San Diego County, there was a batch of the Moderna vaccines that produced an atypically high rate of allergic reactions. The state is trying to isolate that specific batch of the Moderna vaccine. To what degree should we be concerned about that?
I'm not too concerned about it, not knowing enough information about who got vaccinated, why so many people, well, which was still less than 10 in one site. And, you know, in the global picture, from the same lot, which was sent all over the country, nobody else had that similar reaction, although it was paused in California only from, you know, using that lot. So I'm mystified, but in the end of the day, I'm still, you know, comforted by the fact that it's so rare to have a serious allergic response where your throat swells up and, you know, your blood pressure dips. It's estimated to be 1 in 100,000. And everyone gets that reaction if you're going to get it within a few minutes. So that's why everyone who gets the vaccine has to be observed for 15 minutes. And you catch those people who would have that problem. So it doesn't deter my enthusiasm and excitement about the vaccines being rolled out.
Liz tweets at AirTalk, "I'm a veterinarian. I'd like to vaccinate and help provide the vaccinations. I actually got my first vaccine, but LA County Public Health isn't including veterinarians as those capable of helping in a clinical position." That's Liz tweeting at AirTalk. Dr. Peter Chin-Hung, what do you think?
I think that's really short-sighted. There's so many people like veterinarians, like others, who can help in the vaccine efforts. And, you know, I wish there could be some mechanism of doing it. I've heard, initial interest to certain groups regionally, but I don't know of any statewide effort to embrace so many of these volunteers.
Joy on our Facebook page asks to hear more about the treatments working against COVID and what we know about them. She mentions ivermectin, which I'm not familiar with. Dr. Peter Chin-Hung?
Yes, so there's some information that if it's ivermectin that she's talking about, which is an antiparasitic, that there is, you know, just like with, some of the earlier agents like Keytruda or the HIV drugs, that there has been some in vitro activity against the virus. But again, no convincing clinical data that I've seen yet. But again, keeping an open mind, we'll continue to see how these drugs perform with more studies.
All right, Dr. Peter Chin-Hung, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Again, more questions than we have time to answer, but you do such a wonderful job in taking our listener questions. We deeply appreciate it and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks so much, Larry.
Dr. Peter Chin-Hung, UC San Francisco Medical Center, where he's professor of medicine and infectious disease specialist. It's Air Talk on KPECC. We have a jam-packed second hour to come. I'll tell you all about it momentarily.